Good morning. This is Tracy Hales-Vass, right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today, I'm talking to Don Willerton, the author of the Mogi Franklin Mysteries. Good morning, Don.
Good morning.
Well, I really enjoyed book one of the Mogi Franklin Mysteries, The Ghosts of the San Juan. I thought that the characters were great. There's really a foursome, right? Best friends and brother sisters.
Right. There's Mogi and his Jennifer. Jennifer is his sister.
Uh-huh.
And then Frank and Becky are twins from the Navajo Reservation that are going to high school there in Bluff.
Yeah, it's set in the thriving metropolis of Bluff, Utah.
Yes, ma'am. I had to make it a little bit bigger in the fiction story.
Right.
Because it's not very big.
Nope.
In reality, but it worked out.
Enjoyed it. Why don't you, before we get too far ahead, give our listeners a synopsis of the book.
Okay. Mogi and his sister live in Bluff, and they're acquainted with a man in Mexican Hat who runs a rafting business. And so they help him out. The kids from the high school in Bluff help him out, and everything's going great. Well, it's one of the activities of the high school is that they take a rafting trip with this man. He's an outfitter on the San Juan, and they use his boats, and he takes everybody down the San Juan for a nice trip that takes about 3 days, 3 or 4 days. And so while they're on this trip, some mysterious things happen.
Yes.
They're collecting rocks, and Mogi's collecting rocks, and then suddenly the bag disappears, and they're not sure why. And then later on back in Bluff, there's a strange theft that takes place in the high school, and it concerns the rocks that they gathered up, and it's just all sorts of things going on that shouldn't be going on. And in particular, one of the pictures that Mogi took along the river shows a man standing on the ledge that's part of this mesa, and he just can't be there. I mean, it's just impossible to get up to this mesa, up to the ledge, and yet there he is. So all of this makes into a mystery that finally ends up with Mogi being attacked physically and being injured. And so the mystery finally comes to him where he thinks he's beginning to understand. And what he understands is that there's an old legend that occurs on the river. In 1934, there were four men who go down in boats down the San Juan, and they disappear completely. No evidence that they were ever there, no campsites, no bodies, nothing. And, well, this has been a long-term legend of the river, and everybody tells it, but no one understands it. And then Mogi understands that maybe this is connected. All the stuff that's happening today is because of the mystery that happened back in 1934. So he starts researching it, and he starts looking at the picture, and he thinks he finds a clue. So he talks Jennifer and Becky and Frank into going back down the river, back to that mesa where the man was standing on the ledge and investigating. And when they do that, then something develops that is just extraordinary and leads them into great danger. And then the rest of the book is how they work themselves out of that danger.
And I love the setting. You've described the river and the surrounding terrain really well.
Thank you.
So are you a river rafter?
I am. I started rafting in the 1990s and did things locally. And then I was on vacation one time in southern Utah, and I ended up at the launch point that's close to Bluff, and I found out that you could actually raft the river. Well, I thought that sounded really good. So I got more rafts, and a friend and I invested in some of the equipment, and we took a large number of people rafting on the San Juan. Now, when you launch and left, there's about 67 miles worth of river that you can go. And the last 60 miles is a wilderness area. That is, once you get on the river and you go past a certain point, there's no getting out again. It gets to be a 2,000-foot deep canyon, very much like the Grand Canyon, very much the same geology. And the adventure going down there means that you are on your own. So we took this trip, and we went down there, and it is stunning what you find. The geology, the scenery, the canyons, it is just a unique place, I think, in the world, in America.
Mm-hmm.
And that prompted me to say, boy, I wish I could share this. And since I've done that, and I've taken all my family down, and I've taken a lot of friends down, and it still remains a place that is just unique. So whenever I decided to write a story about it, I wanted to convey that feeling of the landscape, the feeling of the rocks, the geology, and the adventure, and put in a framework that created this mystery that young readers would enjoy.
It's full of action and thrill, and the intelligence of the kids working out the mystery. And Mogi is a little bit different. He really figures things out.
Part of my desire when writing the book was to talk about problem solving.
Right.
You know, when you're faced with certain disparate facts or clues, can you put them together in a certain way that really solves what the mystery is? And I hope that I do that. In all the books that I've written, I hope that I show the kids, you know, if you just pay attention and you line everything out and you try to organize it, you really can discover a remarkable quantity of information.
Well, I think that's interesting that the book is so well written, and I think it's aimed at middle grade boys and girls, but they'll learn a lot too.
Yes, ma'am. I am fascinated with history. Southern Utah, all of New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, all the books that I've written really do describe the Southwest. And I typically find history that's true, even though the mystery I create is homegrown. I make those up. But the surrounding history, the surrounding geology, the culture that I talk about, the spiritual dimensions that I introduce are really factual. Every book that I've written, except one, is within a day's drive of Santa Fe. You can actually go up and see the San Juan River. You can go and see these other places I talk about. And that it just increases the interest of, I think, the young reader in understanding that these are real places. You can find them on the map.
That's right. This is book one. How many books are there in the Mogi Franklin Mysteries?
There are 9 books currently.
And they follow Mogi?
That's right. Each book starts out with some kind of historical mystery.
Oh, okay.
You know, I talked about the thing that happens in 1934. Well, the second book is something that happens in 1890. The third book, something in 1780.
Oh.
The fourth book deals with the Pueblo conquest and the war of 1692, when the reconquest comes back. So each book has some kind of historical setting, and that's the first chapter. It introduces the history and introduces some mystery that then remains throughout the rest of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Mogi gets to it in the current time, then he has to deal with the mystery of the ancient times to be able to solve the mystery that he's facing in his current time.
So this 1934 happening that opens this book, is that a true event?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah, I just made that one up.
Wow.
But in fact, it's made up, but there were people who searched for gold in the San Juan Canyons. And they did a lot of geology, mainly because of the oil development around there.
Right.
So it's not a true story, but it sounds like it's a true story.
It does.
And it's kind of based on facts.
Is it true that there are volcanoes in that area?
Absolutely.
Really?
The there's a place on the upper portion of the San Juan that's called Mule's Ear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big chunk of rock that was pushed up, and it stands straight up, and it's a prominent physical landmark.
Mm.
But the reason it was pushed up is that's where that volcanic plug came up. I talk about a vent pipe.
Yes.
That's right where it is. That vent pipe is true. It's right there. It's right on the Navajo Nation on the left-hand side of the river. That whole country in there is just like the Grand Canyon.
That's what it sounded like.
Tremendous geology.
Could you read?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Could you read something for us from Ghosts of the San Juan?
Sure. I'd be happy to.
Thanks.
Let me kind of give you the precursor.
Please.
I talked about this mystery and things happening in Bluff that caused Mogi to be highly suspicious of what's going on. So he looks and he checks out this photograph and he looks at the guy and then he figures out that, oh, wait a minute, there's got to be something on the side of this mountain, this mesa in there. So he decides that the only way to find out is to go back down the river. So it takes some convincing, but he finally gets Jennifer and Frank and Becky to go down the river borrowing one of the rafts of the man that they know an ex-Mexican had, and then taking along an extension ladder, which makes him kind of interested in rowing.
Mm-hmm.
But so he talks them into it, and they get everything together, and they actually set off down the San Juan all by themselves to go investigate this mesa. So when they get there, they camp for the night, and then they take the ladder, and they start climbing up the series of ledges that make up the side of the mesa. And so I'm going to start with the chapter that is whenever they have actually reached the ledge on which the man was standing. Okay, so this is beginning with chapter 14. It's a good thing we brought the 24-footer, Mogi said as he helped Becky onto the flat part of the last ledge. It had taken all of the ladder's length to make the final climb. Did you find it? He called behind him. Jennifer and Frank had already walked across the ledge. I don't understand this at all, he heard Jennifer say. When he and Becky went over to where she was standing, he understood her reaction. It was a natural opening of a tunnel, maybe 2.5 feet wide, 3 feet high, a hole obviously carved by years of erosion. A well-worn depression in the rock led from the bottom of the opening over to the edge of the cliff where it would have been the top of the waterfall. But around the outside of the opening, a sharp lip had been cut into the rock with some kind of saw. Inside the opening, a series of metal brackets were bolted into the rock. Frank knelt down and touched them, looking at how they were positioned around the opening. He rocked back on his heels, looking around on the ground to the side of the tunnel opening. He spied what he expected to find. Check that out, he said as he pointed. It was a flat, thin piece of rock about the size of the opening. In fact, it was exactly the size of the opening. It didn't take much imagination to see that it fit the shape of the carved lip. If it was set directly into the opening, it would have fit like the cover on a manhole. Mogi and Frank pulled the cover into an upright position, and on the back, a series of rods had been attached that matched the brackets in the opening. When rotated by a lever on the inside or by some tool stuck in a little hole on the outside, the rods locked into the brackets attached to the opening in the ledge's wall. The bottom part of the door had an opening about 1 foot wide by 6 inches high to allow water from the inside the tunnel to flow out. This is solid rock, shaped to fit the opening exactly, Mogi said. When it's in place, I bet you can't tell there's any opening at all. That's why we didn't see it last night, Frank added. The cover was in place, which means, he trailed off, raising his eyes to the others. What it means, Becky said, is someone's expecting us. We've been invited to come in. Yes, and it's quite dangerous. I mean, it'll get you on the edge of your chair waiting to find out what these kids are going to do. And there's definitely a bad guy involved.
There is. And I have to say, even though this is geared toward middle graders, I found it thrilling, and I was interested every page.
Oh, good. I'm happy.
So, have you been writing forever?
I grew up reading. I've been a reader forever. Mm-hmm. My mother, she read every Agatha Christie ever published.
Oh, yes.
And when she brought them home from the library, then I would read them. So I grew up reading Agatha Christie and Ellery Queen and Sherlock Holmes especially.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always just transported out of where I was, kind of a meager place. And so I was just highly entertained. So I've always been a reader and always fascinated with books.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the late 90s, especially, I was going places that I wish I could take my kids. But they were too young at the time. So the way that I expressed what I had found was to write about it, to write about these places. Every book that I've written, I've been to the place that I write about. So that was the way that I conveyed the adventure, the mystery, the spiritual quality that I found when I was there.
Right.
And I was hoping to entice my kids to go with me whenever we went.
Oh, good plan. Did it work?
It worked. My kids have been every place that I've been.
Oh, good.
They're big rafters. In fact, this summer we're going to take another trip down to San Juan. I'm taking my grandkids.
Oh, that's great.
It is. It's just going to be wonderful.
Yes. Well, you have written so many books now. What is your writing process?
You know, it has always so far begun with me finding a place that I just really enjoy, and then finding out the history about it. I mean, there's history everywhere. It's just fascinating.
It is.
What I can find in my own backyard.
Right.
And if you live in Farmington, you're right in the middle of some of the big mysteries and the big adventures and histories in all of America.
It's true.
For example.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's
I was hoping to find that. I was finding that and then wanting to tell about it. So I would start with a place. I would find out its history, and then I would try to think of some way to, against that history, create a modern-day mystery that would be entertaining to young readers.
That's great.
And that crafted for me kind of what the plot would be.
And learning the Agatha Christie way of writing mysteries is very helpful.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
She was just so smart at that.
She really was. She knew exactly when to drop a clue and when not to, and when to throw in a red herring. Now, do you have a website that our listeners can go to?
I do. DonaldWillerton.com is a website that shows all the books that I've written.
Okay.
And there's a special place that has extra photographs. I show you more pictures than actually going down the San Juan, for example.
Great.
So every book that I've written about, I include extra photographs that people can see what I'm talking about. The country is just gorgeous.
People can buy your books on Amazon and where else?
You can actually go to the website.
Okay.
You want to see all the books. And then there are pointers for each book that will take you to Amazon.
Okay.
And you can order them there.
Great.
You can also find them at the Barnes & Noble website.
Okay.
You can find them at Terra Nova Books, who is my publisher.
Mm-hmm.
They're a small publisher in Santa Fe. You can go to their website, which is terranovabooks.com, and find a list of all the books there. You can order through them. Yeah, I've written two adult books that have been published.
Oh, and
The latest one came out April 1st.
And what?
It's called The King of Trash, and it's pretty interesting.
What's the title again?
The King of Trash.
Oh, okay.
And it talks about the trash in the ocean, and also talks about the problem of homelessness in our large cities. And it's not a middle reader. It's a genuine adult book. So I get all sorts of people dying in it.
Mm-hmm. And your other adult book?
The one adult book is called Smoke Dreams. And it's kind of a fascinating book. Smoke.
Okay.
Smoke Dreams. It's a story that starts in 1870 when there is a man who has a 10-year-old son, and that family has built this great big house that's up on the Canadian River. Right at the intersection of the Mora and the Canadian is where they build this big mansion.
Mm-hmm.
The boy is kidnapped by the Comanche Indians.
Oh.
And he's kept for 7 years. It's 1877 before he's forced to get out of the Comanches and become a new life as a white man again.
Wow.
And it's hard for him.
Yes.
He has become a leader of the Comanches and a vicious warrior. So his conversion to what's going on is rather difficult. Well, then the story in the present day is that a man is restoring an old Victorian mansion. It turns out to be the same mansion that the boy grew up in and was kidnapped from.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes into ghosts and spiritual things, and lots of things happen to that house. It turns out that the house is alive.
Oh.
Well, that's kind of interesting. How do you do that? Well, it turns out I did it pretty well.
All right.
And it just becomes a fascinating tale.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. Smoke Dreams.
Smoke Dreams.
So you write all the time?
Whenever I've been doing the movie series, I kept it pretty much. I was having one every 6 months.
Yeah, very good.
I had an illness last year, so I missed out the whole year. And then this year, I started writing an adult book. And so now I'm kind of into adult books for a while.
Oh, good.
I'm kind of driven by passion.
That's what you have to follow as a writer.
Yeah, it makes it so much more interesting to me
right.
to write something that I am passionate about.
Well, good.
And I will assume that if I do a good product, other people will be passionate about reading them.
Exactly. Well, they sound fascinating.
Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you about books and writing.
Thank you.
And that was Donald Willerton talking about book one of the Mogi Franklin Mysteries, Ghosts of the San Juan, and about his other books. This is Tracy Hales-Vass on KSJE 90.9 FM in beautiful Farmington, New Mexico.